Raleigh Bilingue presents a town hall with residents of Congressional District 21 in California, a battleground in the fight for Congress. This public forum was recorded live at the Woman's Clubhouse in Sanger, California on October 15, 2018. This is a production of Raleigh Bilingue in collaboration with KQED Public Radio in San Francisco.
DJ, Mr. Osvaldo Vera, I've lived here over 50 years. I've been in the trenches. I was a radio supervisor broker for 10, 15 years. I fought for the children, the kids. Half a block away, I had 40 of the poorest kids in the 70s and 80s, teaching them the right way. And at that time, we had three gangs, Sureño, Norteño, and the police. Okay? Horrible. I've seen the damage that these guys would do to our kids. Now we're okay. There's a lot of questions. We just stopped the marijuana dispensaries here. You know, and everybody knows that's number one problem. And now you're thinking about profit and investing. How about the damage it's going to cause? The pain it's going to cause to our people. I lived through it. I've been here. And I want to thank Mr. Ralph Cumano. Right here, he helped me stop the dispensaries. Three people out of 35,000 people. And I want to mention Mr. Victor Lopez, the mayor of Orange Cove. They offered him $1 million to sign. No way. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm not going to poison my kids. Like I tell the city council every other meeting, you know, it's not about you guys. It's about the future of the kids, our grandkids. Yeah, they talk about profit, but think about the damage, brother. Once a kid get hooked, sign a weakness ticket to hell, they're going to live in misery. That's number one problem. And that's why we have so many homeless, because they're all on drugs. And the politicians in Sacramento, all they're thinking about profit here, profit there. Mm-hmm. No good. Where do you stand on this shit, the drugs? They just got this guy in Yosemite, thousands of plants, that's a federal land, 22 years old. 4 years, paid vacation. He's gonna serve two, gonna deport him. He was illegal. He's gonna be back doing the same. We need to get down from these guys. Where do you stand on saving our kids?
Thank you so much. And that is, that's great input from the issues that are confronted on the local level. You did not want a dispensary here, right? Boom, right? And you made it happen. And that's what the community absolutely decided. And frankly, I would go along with that. Is that, I've got three boys myself, and do I want them, you know, having a dispensary down the street or a liquor store or whatever? No, I think those things are, you know, there should be special areas for that. And if a community decides they want that's fine. The fact of the matter is that the law is passed here in California, and so how the best regulate it, right? So there aren't these criminal elements that are up in Yosemite or doing cash or under the table things and keeping the crime out of it. Just like maybe the distributors with alcohol and so on, where it's very controlled and taxed industry that has serious social and community repercussions, and how do we handle those? But those are some things that we actually have to be handling and addressing. And as you rightly point out, the issues that are going to come about because of that, just like the issues that come about because of alcohol or other type of substance abuse, and certainly the opioid issue is such a huge issue, those are all things that need to be addressed. We just can't ignore them. And I can tell you, as a congressman, I'm going to be on top of those things. I'm just not going to let them go by the wayside. I'm going to listen to the communities, and I'm going to respond to the communities. So.
Just a small comment.
Can you say your name and where you're from?
My name is Lupi Balladares. Like I say, I belong to the Lord's Huerta Foundation, and I'd like to welcome the members from there. The Lulu, she's our organizer and supervisor. Sandy. Right here, Mr. Cantu, Waldo, myself, Rita, and there's that guy over there.
Rick. Rick.
So you got all these supporters which belong to the Lower Huerta Foundation. So, you know, you do us good, and we'll do you good.
Amen. Well, thank you. It's once again, no, I certainly appreciate that, and certainly appreciate all the support. But across the board, and this is what everyone knows, is that your representative is to represent everybody, right? Everyone in the Valley, regardless of what party or where you come from, you know, how much you make or how much you don't make. And that's one of the biggest issues in this race. If you look at the contributions to my campaign, I can tell you our average contribution is about $12. And those are from individuals. So those are the people I'm going to serve. My opponent, you know, he's doing, what, $1,000 fundraisers at country clubs that you have to pay $1,000 to come talk to him, all right? He gets half of his money from corporations and corporate PACs. So who is he going to answer to? He's not going to answer to anyone here tonight. He doesn't even bother showing up. And the reason why he doesn't show up? Because he's going to go visit and speak and listen to the guys that are paying his bills, the corporations. He's forgotten who he's supposed to represent, which is the people.
So good evening, Mr. TA. My name is Antonio Cortez, and I would like to know why you are the best candidate to help win the immigration reform.
Sure, thank you. Why I'm the best candidate for immigration reform? Once again, I'm the son of immigrants, like I think probably a lot of us here tonight. But we all know what we need to do with regard to immigration, do we not? We know that everyone that's in the States needs to be here legally, right? We need an immigration policy that's going to keep our communities safe, that's going to meet our workforce needs. You know, when I talk to my friends and associates in the ag industry, what do they tell me? They say, hey, we've got a real immigration problem. We need more immigrants, right? Not less. We need more. And obviously, we're talking about legal immigrants. We need an immigration policy that's not going to tear apart families, and certainly one that's not going to put kids in cages, okay? You know, and so that's... So I can tell you, with immigration, that's going to be at the forefront of what we're going to get done. And you've got a president in a party that thinks that they work for the president, that are just keep on putting out these crazy immigration bills, right, that are just demonizing the hardworking immigrants here in the country. And so we're going to have a reasonable, comprehensive bill that's going to address the things that I just spoke about. And the American people know that that's what needs to be done. And we're going to do that on day one in Congress.
My name is Humberto Gomez. I know you as Tijuana, instead of todos juntos. What happened is that I'm very disappointed that our elected congressman is not here. And he has been accusing TJ of this and that and that. But he's real dumb because he's giving us the answers. He's saying that he pays so much for this one and he pays so much for this one. But he's not talking about himself. He's stealing from us our dignity and respect. And that's the reason I'm really upset with him. Our respect is that he not even had the guts to show up in these public forums and really tell us what he has done, or what he's planning to do for us. And our dignity is that he's putting our kids in cages. And he's saying yes to whatever the president asked him to do. We got a huge problem here with those two congressmen, with Valadeo and with Nunez, because they're nothing but peons of Trump. So we need a change. We need a change, and I got a lot of faith on you that you're going to make those changes. Because you have already answered my question. My question was on water. I got a lot of my friends on the west side, my own community in Parlier, we're drinking water that contains pesticides and arsenics. My wife refused to use that the water for cooking. You know, but in the West Side, you know, the water comes like chocolate. And they tell you you had to leave it at least 30 minutes running, and at the end of the month, you're gonna have to pay between $180 to $220 for the water that you cannot use, with the exception to take a bath, but you smell like crap, you know, after you take your bath with the water. So I'm imploring you to do something on that issue, and that's something that I really hoping that you can do. Education. That's the other thing that I want you to really stress on Congress and resolve the issue of our DACA's people. I got a lot of respect for DACA's because there are attorneys, there are doctors, there are engineers, potential attorneys, potential doctors. We need to fix the problem right away and go back and establish a real, I would say, program that it will encompass everybody, and not only DACA, but also DAPA, which includes the parents of those kids. You know, so that's what I'm expecting from you. And people don't like me because I always give advice. Don't worry about the attacks. They want to get you on the defensive, be on the offensive. There is a dicho in Mexico that we say that ya no tienen más con qué asustarnos más que el petate del muerto. It's really hard for me to translate because you're gonna take the salt and the pepper that is with that. You know, but don't be afraid. We are with you, we will vote for you, we will work for you, and thank you all these people that, you know, we're there for you. So that's all I can tell you.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Gomez, and you know, you speak about respect reminds me of another story. I was at another one of the health clinics that we funded, and every time I do a project, I'll go back every year to see how the project is working, how many jobs they're creating at this particular health clinic, how many people they're serving, they need any help. And I was at one of these clinics, and I was talking to the manager, and we were looking out over the waiting room, and it was basically about packed like it is tonight. A lot of people are there. And it had only been open for about a year. And I was saying, man, isn't this great? You know, these people, they're getting health care, a lot of them for the first time. They're getting immunizations and vaccinations and checkups. And this was a number of years ago. And she goes, yeah, you know what's even better? It's the respect. Is that having health care and not having to go out and beg for it when your daughter or your son or your wife gets sick, it gives you a little modicum of respect, of self-respect, that you can take care of your family. And that's what was one of the biggest affronts about the attacks on the Affordable Care Act, and trying to take away health care from half the people of the district. You're not only trying to take away their health care, they were trying to take away their respect.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. This is going to be the last call for questions. Does anyone else from the audience have a question for Mr. Cox? If you do, you can make a line at the microphone right now. In the meantime, while this gentleman's coming up to the mic, it was really great to hear what that last gentleman said, because, you know, in my own work, I hear from voters all the time that they feel disconnected from government, that they feel disconnected from their elected officials. You know, we have congressmen who don't hold public forums, neither in person or telephonically, and I'm just wondering, if you were elected, how would you keep those lines of communication open with your constituents?
I can tell you, when I'm elected, I'm going to guarantee that we're going to do at least 4 town halls, you know, every year. I think you can see, I mean, I like coming out, and this is why you run for an office, to represent the people. And to be able to know what their concerns are, what their hopes and dreams and concerns are. And you can't do that when you're hiding in an office. You have to get out there in the communities, in the living rooms, in the offices, and actually speak and work with the people. That's what I look forward to doing.
What's your name, sir?
Stan Santos. I'm also with the Labor Council, as you know. But so I have a part labor question and a part community question. But one of the things that I've been aware of is the investment era, the reinvestment and Recovery Act, Obama's investment, did a lot of infrastructure. also, one thing that I think people in this area might be aware of is the fact that every time Farmer John is digging a post hole in the North 40, he hits a cable, and then all of a sudden, all the phone lines go down in Sanger, Reedley, Parlier, you know, like five different small communities. When you add up the population, you're talking 50 or 60,000 people. And then a couple of cell towers happen to be in that same cable, so then your cell phones go down. And then people die in fires and in these disasters that we're probably seeing with more frequency. So our infrastructure, as an example, telecommunications and broadband, have been kind of scavenged. And I'd like to know, this is more of a technology question, but it could also be a labor question, because it takes a highly skilled labor force to do that, mostly union-represented labor force, in the case of AT&T and Frontier. What would you do to encourage the kind of investment similar to the era, but in telecommunications, in the technologies that will bring health services to the home, it'll bring job training to the home, it'll make it possible for elderly people to apply for social services, to get health screens, you know, through the connectivity that would create, that would be created by that, and we bridge the digital divide. I don't know if that people understand that, but that's my particular concern.
No, thanks so much, Dan. Absolutely, is that, once again, getting back to the $1 trillion of infrastructure investment that we were promised, that wasn't delivered. $1 trillion. And sure, should there be roads, bridges? Yeah, absolutely. But how about broadband, rural broadband, and those types of communication structures and infrastructure for the future that's going to allow all of the great things that you just talked about? That's something that we absolutely have to be investing in. We need to be investing in America, because that's the best investment we can make, is it not? And so with regard to the union force, you know, one of my biggest regrets is I never got my UA card, right, with plumbers and pipe fitters. And so I know what a quality trained union workforce can deliver, the best value for the dollar. And so I'm absolutely behind you in supporting unions and certainly the trained labor workforce. So. And jobs for the youth, right? Career jobs, right, that aren't going to go away. So thank you.
Well, that's all that we have time for. Thank you, Mr. Cox, for your time. Thank you for your presence and your attention. And thank you, everyone, for coming. And please vote on November.
Thank you, everyone, again, so much for coming. It's an honor. It'd be honored to have your vote. Thank you.
This has been a congressional town hall meeting with residents of District 21 in Sanger, California. This session on the race to Congress between Republican incumbent Dave Valdao and Democratic challenger T.J. Cox was recorded at the Woman's Club in Sanger on October 15, 2018. This program was produced by Radio Bilingue in partnership with KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Support for this program was provided in part by the W.K. Family Fund, the James Irvine Foundation, and the Central Valley Foundation. Jorge Ramirez is a sound engineer. Production assistance is provided by Maria de Jesus Gomez. Maria Iraña is Radio Bilingue's broadcast manager. Samuel Orozco is the executive producer. This is Radio Bilingue.